This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When generals overturn the will of the people and put their own ambitions above the rule of law, security suffers and democracy dies.
That was U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin speaking during a three-day visit to Africa. Details coming up. Also, Burkina Faso's military junta says it thwarted a coup attempt yesterday. And Gabon's prime minister says international sanctions and pressure for a return to constitutional order could be devastating to the country's economy. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Burkina Faso's military junta says it thwarted a coup attempt yesterday, reporting that officers and others had plotted to destabilize the country with what it called the dark intention of attacking the institutions of the republic. Few details were available, although a prosecutor said in a statement today that four officers were detained for questioning. Michael Shorkin, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and an expert on the Sahel, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam, the report is not surprising given that two coups in the West African country last year were triggered by a worsening insurgency by groups that have ties to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State.
There are two large insurgent groups and they are absolutely destroying the place. And Ouagadougou is effectively, the capital is effectively encircled. And slowly but surely, I expect the jihadists to tighten the noose. And because of this pressure, there is, I think we're going to see a growing sense of frustration and desperation. And this is going to shorten people's patience, some people's patience with the regime, while giving other people ideas about how maybe they could do things better. Or maybe the impatience of some creates an opportunity for others to take over simply for purely personal ambition. And it's really struggled with democracy, and I think it's almost naive of people to expect democracy to take root quickly and for it to develop a stable democratic system, given everything that it's been up against and the fact that it's had so little experience with functional democracies.
Would you say that this junta, given all those challenges they're facing, have they made anything better for the ordinary citizen?
I don't think they have. Now, it's not for lack of trying. The Burkinabe government has put into effect a number of measures attempting to improve the security forces, improve their performance, improve their ability to coordinate with one another. They've done a number of things that you can point to and say, good. So it's not like they're just sitting on their heels doing nothing. Part of the problem is that a lot of what they've done simply isn't enough. And we could also point to the fact that by expelling the French, they have deprived themselves of an important ally in the fight against the jihadists. But another problem is that the challenges that this country faces are so great that even if the regime were to be doing all the right things for all the right reasons, it's still hard to imagine that it would succeed, or rather that it would succeed quickly. It just would take time. It's the scale of the problems that are just, they're so huge.
Would it be the same, do you think, if they still had a democratically elected leader in charge of the country?
Yes and no. I mean, the main advantage of a democratic leader, I think, ultimately, is that the regime, the government, potentially would have more legitimacy, at least in the eyes of some of the public, but also that it would have more legitimacy in the eyes of the international community. The United States and also France would be much more open to working with them and supporting them, whereas right now, well, France has been kicked out, the United States is basically kind of trying to sort of keeping a distance because of our own laws that prevent us from providing security assistance to military dictatorships or coups, governments that come about through a coup d'etat. That being said, the previous president, Roch Kabore, who was democratically elected, by all accounts, he was a very decent guy. He was doing his best. He was out of his depth in terms of the kind of jihadist, dealing with the jihadist insurgency.
A colleague here at VOA said one of his college professors some four decades ago predicted that in the not too distant future, you're going to see all of Africa being run by either a military junta or some kind of puppet figure that is kind of installed by the military junta. What do you think about that?
Unfortunately, I see that as all too plausible, but I would caution listeners to remember that having successful liberal democracy is extremely difficult. And before you have a successful liberal democracy, you have to have a liberal democratic political culture that takes a very long time to take root.
That's Michael Shurkin, an expert on the Sahel and a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam here in Washington. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin returns to the U.S. today after wrapping up his first tour across the African continent as Defense Secretary. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with Austin and has details from his trip.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin started his tour in Djibouti, home to the primary U.S. military base on the African continent. There, he met with Djiboutian leaders and the Somali president, whose forces, Austin said, had made more progress against the Al-Shabaab terror group in the past year than the previous 5 years combined. Austin then turned to Kenya.
How are you?
He visited a base in Manda Bay near the Somali border, where a terrorist attack in 2020 killed 3 Americans. Vincent Kimosab is a policy analyst with Sovereign Insight.
Message here being very clear that the war on terror still remains top on the agenda of the American government.
The American and Kenyan defense secretaries signed a 5-year security agreement to support working together against their common terror threat. Austin also pledged $100 million in support of Kenyan security deployments as Kenya prepares to lead a multinational peacekeeping mission to Haiti to combat gang violence. Kenya's Cabinet Secretary of Defense, Aden Duale.
Kenya is ready, Kenya is willing to lead that multinational peacekeeping force that will go to Haiti.
Austin ended his trip on Africa's western coast in Angola, the first U.S. Defense Secretary to ever visit the country. Both nations are hopeful that Angola can dump Russia as its arms supplier and opt for American-made weapons.
Africa deserves better than outsiders trying to tighten their grip on this continent. Africa deserves better than autocrats selling cheap guns and pushing mercenary forces like the Wagner Group or depriving grain from hungry people around the world.
Austin called out African military juntas without naming Burkina Faso, Gabon, Mali, or Niger. It was his most forceful rhetoric since the military removed Niger's elected president from power in July.
When generals overturn the will of the people and put their own ambitions above the rule of law, security suffers and democracy dies. Militaries exist to defend their people and not to defy them. And Africa needs militaries that serve their citizens and not the other way around.
France decided this week to withdraw its military forces from Niger by the end of the year. And analysts say the U.S. could follow suit should the Nigerian military not return the elected government to power. Bill Raggio is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
Niger has become the key hub, the key center of counterterrorism operations for the U.S. and France in the region. And if this is it's cut back or if it's reduced or if it's ended, there is no other assets in the region that the U.S. can use.
The U.S. has so far kept its forces in Niger, but the Pentagon has declined to conduct counterterror operations with Niger's military. Carla Babb, VOA News. Luanda, Angola.
Gabon's prime minister says international sanctions and pressure for a return to constitutional order could be devastating to the country's economy. He also says the military junta needs time to carry out reforms and a national dialogue before a projected return to civilian rule. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Speaking to reporters Wednesday, Gabon's Prime Minister Raymond Dong Sima said he wants to remind the world that by seizing power, the military saved the Central African states from a civil war. he said Gabon's political opposition was ready to take up arms and defend its victory after ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba orchestrated alarming fraud and declared himself the winner of the August 26 presidential election.
Nous prenons la direction de revenir à la norme, à ce qui est normal.
Sima said the international community and friendly countries should be compassionate and stop all sanctions they have already imposed or are planning to impose to press for a return to constitutional order in Gabon. The prime minister said Gabon will have challenges developing its economy and fighting poverty if foreign pressure and sanctions are not rapidly removed. Contested results indicate 69-year-old Albert Ondo Osa, leader of Gabon's main opposition group Alternance 2023, won the August 26 election. But soldiers announced on national television on August 30 they had seized power. The designation of General Brice Clotaire Oligingema, head of the Republican Guard, as president sparked an international outcry for a return to constitutional order. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced the suspension of what he called certain foreign assistance programs to Gabon, pending a review of the circumstances that led to the ouster of President Bongo, who had ruled Gabon since 2009 when he succeeded his late father Omar Bongo. The State Department said the suspension would not affect U.S. government operations in the oil-producing Central African nation, but did not elaborate on what U.S.-funded programs would be affected or how much money would be placed on hold. Sima, speaking in Gabon's capital Libreville, said the country's military junta should be allowed to undertake initiatives to restore stability, carry out institutional and legislative reforms, fight corruption, ensure sustainable economic development, and conduct a national dialogue before organizing elections. Sima did not say how much time the military junta needs to carry out the reforms and return power to civilians. Telesphore Ondo is a public law lecturer at Omar Bongo University in Libreville.
Je pense que la deuxième étape va être d'organiser de manière formelle.
Ondo tells Gabon State TV that the Central African State military leader needs time and resources to carry out consultations and organize a national dialogue that will reconcile civilians who are angry over the Bongo family's close to 60-year rule that did not develop the oil-producing nation. He says during the consultation and dialogue, the military junta should make it known if it needs 1, 2, or 3 years to return to civilian rule. France, China, Russia, the United Kingdom, and Canada are among nations along with the U.S. that have expressed concerns about the military junta taking over in Gabon and are asking for a return to normalcy. Similar requests have come from the United Nations, two Central African regional blocs, and the African Union. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, has expressed deep concern about arrests of journalists since Ethiopia declared a six-month state of emergency on August 4th in response to conflict in the northern Amhara region between government forces and the FANNO, an armed militia group. Mutuki Mumo is the Sub-Saharan Africa representative for CPJ. She tells me the Ethiopian state of emergency law, reviewed by CPJ, grants security personnel wide powers of arrest and provides for the suspension of due process of law.
What we've noted historically or over the last few years in Ethiopia is that times of political tension or when conflict flares up, unfortunately, are correlated with attacks on the press. This can be in the form of arrests. This can be in the form of threats against journalists or expulsions of foreign journalists. And of course, we must talk about things like internet disruptions, which we consider broad tools of censorship. Now, unfortunately, the conflict in Amhara has followed this pattern where we're seeing a correlation of aggression against journalists. So we as CPJ, in August, we documented the arrest of several journalists. These journalists had come from outlets that were commenting on or covering the conflict, or were commenting on and covering the state of emergency, which was declared in August. Some of these journalists remain behind bars.
Like you just mentioned, Ethiopia has declared a six-month state of emergency on August 4th in response to the conflict in the Amhara region. So the state of emergency law, I think, was reviewed by the CPJ, and it grants, you know, security personnel wide powers. Can you elaborate on that?
That's actually a really good question. We did not write extensive research on the law specifically, so we have not reviewed it extensively, but we are aware of the outsized powers it gives. It gives authorities in times like this, and it is, again, in keeping with a pattern. We've seen that previous state of emergency laws have been used in negative ways against journalists. The security personnel have used the wide powers of arrest provided by such laws to target critical journalists. And we have examples that this is similarly the case with this six-month state of emergency that was declared in August, and that gives authorities similarly broad powers of arrest. And in some ways, disrupts the due process that one would expect once they're arrested.
Now, let's talk about the number of journalists detained in Ethiopia in, let's say, in 2023.
It's hard to give like a definitive figure because the research is dynamic, the research is ongoing, but we can talk about some of the cases we've documented. So going as far back as April, we documented a spate of arrests of a group of journalists. Some of them were known to have provided commentary on the conflict in Amhara. I believe that at least four of them remain behind bars. And as again, as I said, in August, we documented another spate of arrests. Two of those journalists, I believe, are still behind bars and have been moved from Addis Ababa, where they were initially detained, to Awash Aga. So, and related to the conflict also, we can talk about a recent other case where we documented the arrest of at least three journalists who were covering protests in Tigray. Those journalists have also since been released. So this is why I say it's difficult at any moment to say this is the hard figure that we're going with, because it is a dynamic situation. It is research that is evolving. But what we can talk about generally is that there's a pattern of targeting journalists or arrest of journalists, many of whom who have published commentary or reportage on the conflict. And we also see a pattern where, you know, there are questions about them having the due process that they deserve once they are arrested.
Has the government responded to any of these allegations? Has CPJ requested any comments from the government?
So I could say generally the response has not been what we would hope for. We would hope for the government to come out and to, you know, clarify and to make its position clear on some of these cases. But that's not what we've seen.
That was CPJ Sub-Sahara Africa Representative Mutuki Mumo. She spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Earlier this month, there were drone strikes on suspected Wagner Group mercenaries in Sudan. The United States has accused Wagner of supporting the paramilitary rapid support forces in its battle against Sudan's National Army, a conflict that began in April and has cost thousands of lives. Several days ago, the CNN News Network in the United States reported that evidence showed Ukrainian operatives were behind the drone attacks on Wagner troops. Our colleague Ostap Yaryush in VOA's Ukrainian service last week spoke with Ukrainian intelligence Lieutenant General Kryola Budanov.
Дивіться, перш за все, хочу вам сказати, що особисто я, наприклад, десь ще рік тому.
Budanov says a year ago he warned that all Russians who fought are fighting or plan to fight against Ukraine will be punished anywhere. However, he says he would not confirm or deny the CNN reports on the Sudan drone strikes. Budanov goes on to say he thinks what happened in Sudan is well known to everyone and that Wagner participated in the start of the conflict in Sudan. Wagner Group forces operate in several African nations, including Mali, Libya, and the Central African Republic. According to the U.S. government, Wagner's operations in those countries, which give it access to valuable mineral resources such as gold, are used to fund its fighting in Russia's war against Ukraine. Republican contenders to be the party's nominee for U.S. president sparred for 2 hours in their second debate last night. With the first primary election less than 4 months away, all the participants are trailing former President Donald Trump in the polls, but remain hopeful of catching fire with voters before next year's election. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutu was in California for the debate.
Here they go again. With a nod to a popular line from a Ronald Reagan debate, the seven Republican candidates took to the stage at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California. It took only minutes for the group to start bickering, each of them determined to break from the pack. On immigration, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said he would send the National Guard to join with Customs and Border Control to secure the border with Mexico. China became the enemy during much of the debate. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley said she would send special operations to attack Mexican drug cartels and stop normal trade relations with China until the country halts the flow of fentanyl. Biotech investor Vivek Ramaswamy on the Russian war in Ukraine said just because Putin is an evil dictator doesn't mean Ukraine is good, and went on to say China is the real enemy. Florida has banned Chinese nationals from buying property near military installations, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says he supports a similar ban across the United States. Missing from the debate was the Republican frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, who chose to meet with workers in Detroit, Michigan, where United Auto Workers are striking. An NBC News survey shows nearly 60% of Republican voters choosing the former president over his rivals, with DeSantis coming in second at 16%. Afterward, the candidates continued the debate. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum criticized the Biden administration for the recent prisoner swap with Iran.
They got five prisoners, we got five prisoners. But they also got $6 billion, which they can use to advance their terrorism. And this is the nation that is the largest sponsor of state terrorism in the world.
Former Vice President Mike Pence spoke of his former boss.
Now we see Donald Trump walking away from the very agenda that defined our administration and has defined the Republican movement over the last 50 years. I mean, where we stood tall on the world stage, now Donald Trump is talking the language of appeasement and withdrawal.
These candidates will take a break from debating for a little over a month. The third Republican debate is November 8th in Miami, Florida, a little less than a year before the general election. Caroline Presutti, VOA News, Simi Valley, California.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Impuga, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.